Today's episode of Nerd Soup is sponsored by NordVPN, and right now you can save 70% off a 3-year plan plus one additional month for free when you visit nordvpn.com/nerdsoup, or use code NERDSOUP. Surfing the web can be a dangerous place these days, and when connected to a public network, your sensitive information is vulnerable. Hackers look to exploit those who are unprotected on the internet, and that's where NordVPN comes in. With Nord, you are connected to their virtual private networks, a private network that shields your IP address, private passwords, and sensitive information. Nord keeps your information safe by using military-grade encryption and offers compatibility with most operating systems like Windows, macOS, iOS, and Android. A cool feature of Nord is the ability to sign into their servers in over 60-plus countries around the world. This gives you the opportunity to access content from different places. Say you're living in the US and want to watch a series only streaming in the UK. All you need to do is press a button, and voila, you're enjoying some of those classic British TV comedies. NordVPN provides up to 6 simultaneous connections across all of your devices, so whether if you're using a phone, a laptop, tablet, you can stay protected with Nord. So visit nordvpn.com/nerdsoup if you're interested in protecting your internet experience, and you will receive 70% off a 3-year plan. And after that, it's only around $3.49 a month. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Nerd Soup. I'm Bo Oliver, joined today by Aaron, the Nerd Soup Monkey, and we are back to finish our Lord of the Rings. Well, not finish. Continue. Our Lord of the Rings Revisited series with The Two Towers, the second installment in what many people consider to be the greatest trilogy of all time, and what many people consider to be the best movie of the three, Two Towers.
Like I said in the last one, it always changes for me. So, I mean, coming off of Helm's Deep, I'm like, yeah, Two Towers is probably my favorite.
Yeah.
But then I watch Return of the King, and it's like, oh, no. And then it's a cycle.
I think as soon as it starts, you realize that this movie is going to be a bit darker. I mean, the first one obviously has death and it has violence, but this one, the characters are really being tested in their respective journeys. And obviously, following the books, it splits it up between Sam and Frodo's adventures with Gollum and Sméagol, and then we also follow the trio of Aragorn, Gimli, and Legolas. And also can't forget about Pip and Merry. So, once again, kind of taking a page out of the Empire Strikes Back playbook. Obviously, the book came out first, but splitting up the story, and they do it seamlessly. They don't miss a beat. I mean, they get you right back into the world. It's like you just finished Fellowship of the Ring.
Well, yeah, and I think...
Because, basically, that's where it starts off.
Yeah. And the way they filmed them all simultaneously and everything, it really just is one long movie. And when you watch the extended versions, it's a very long
movie.
Yeah. But yeah, this one picked up right where the last one left off. I loved how this movie opens up, especially with Gandalf fighting the Balrog and him, like, just one of my favorite things any character in any movie has ever done, just fucking shooting downwards, grabbing his sword, and just fighting this dude.
It's so reckless. It's one of the. It's like when Anakin, another Star Wars reference, jumps off his speeder. Mm-hmm. It's so stupid, so illogical. But here it makes sense. You know, there's nowhere else to go. He's on a suicide mission, and I love this. It looks so good. This little man beating this giant creature. It's so convincing. It's like, okay, this is the power of the wizard. This is what he's truly capable of, and it is a great. I mean, you don't want it to end that first scene when you go to Frodo waking up. You're like, what? Go back to the good stuff.
Well, they do go back into it later on, and yeah. I love that, and we'll talk about that. Yeah. But everything, though, in the beginning, too, with Sam and Frodo and them kind of continuing their journey and their introduction to Gollum. And
yeah.
I think...
The most iconic character to come out of the franchise.
Yes, and then going right to picking up on Aragorn, Legolas, and Gimli's journey. It just picks you back up where these characters are, gives them a great opening, and it's like, yes, I'm ready for this film to take place.
And this is...
I'm locked in.
This is the performance that really... I mean, Jar Jar Binks, we always talk about, that's the first instance of having a main supporting character fully digitized, but they take it to a next level because this character still looks real. I couldn't believe it. I was trying to convince myself that he wasn't real, but the CG looks so great. And obviously it's a combination of Weta Digital, the company that brought this character to life, and Andy Serkis's incredible performance. I mean, the depths that he reached within himself to bring out this performance, it's not easy. We all do the voice, we can all mock the character, but to make this work, another Star Wars reference reminds me of Yoda. If this doesn't work, the movie doesn't work.
I think it's one of the best performances of all time, even though if the Academy won't recognize it as acting because he's not technically on screen, the mocap work he did, the voice, and just
my precious,
the flip between Gollum and Sméagol, and that, like, it's funny, it's terrifying at times, it's just something that he's able to do to perfection. It really is just an amazing job that Andy Serkis is able to do with this character. And like you said, like, this character could easily come off as, if the CG doesn't look great, it could be a huge distraction. And if the performance isn't great, it could just feel off. But it just fits seamlessly into this world.
He is so creepy. It's like having a pet that's too smart because you got him on the rope, but he's pulling the rope. He's yanking you in different directions. I don't like having this little creature following these two characters around. It's the weirdest love triangle of all time. And I like this too because it's usually Sam is distrusting of Gollum, rightfully so. And the other character is usually, you know, he would come under Gollum's spell. He would start to sympathize. That would be Frodo. But Frodo's like, yeah, no, I don't trust him either, but we have no choice. And he does grow to sympathize with him because he sees himself in this character. I mean, he's the what could go wrong if you get seduced by the ring.
And he tells Sam something like, I have to know that he can change.
Because, right, yes.
For my own sake, my own sanity. And I think that that's the strongest part of this movie is Gollum and his kind of that the journey that character takes and how he's perceived by Sam and Frodo, because it just it shows what the ring is doing to Frodo. It's obviously not as extreme where he still looks like Frodo, but slowly but surely he starts to act different, has flashes and moments where he kind of loses himself. And you could see it right there that this is what is could happen to him.
Yeah.
And just the Smeagol character, how I think he is a very sympathetic character. And Frodo says he does feel bad for him. And just it's just this the ring just corrupted his mind to the point where there is Gollum, but he still has that little bit in him. And that's where you get the conflicting kind of dual personalities.
Yeah. Kind of like Split, you know, he develops this personality to kind of protect himself. Mm-hmm. He has to be Gollum when he looks like this, when he's been through so much pain. That's how he survives.
There's still like that childlike innocence with the Smeagol character. Mm-hmm. And I know he made fun of me when I said it when we last watched the movie. He's like, he's kind of cute at times. Like
he is kind of cute at times.
The big eyes and he's got that little smile.
When he had the fish in his mouth, when he thought he was, I was like, oh, he kind of reminds me of a little puppy.
Yeah.
But he is horrifying also at times.
Oh, definitely.
He is genuinely scary when he goes to Gollum. I mean, the speech, when he gives the speech to Faramir about his precious, I think that's the best scene of the movie, when he turns around and he's like, but no, I think a lot of people criticized Lord of the Rings for not being complex when Game of Thrones got really popular, but I think there are instances of characters that truly represent the duality of man and the struggle. Boromir and Gollum, and you saw it in the first movie with Boromir, and it comes back when you are introduced to his brother, and they have to tell him, hey, you know, this is why your brother died. Mm-hmm. And with Gollum, it's very evident there. So they do capture the complexity of being a person in a world that's so riddled with political complexities. So it isn't just black and white. I mean, for a lot of it is, but there are...
Well, I think a lot of times when people, like simple themes or simple overall messages are, you know, just because it's a simple concept and it's been done before, I think the way it's explored through this movie in particularly, but other movies that do it well, you can kind of, there are clever ways to explain a simple aspect. So, and I think this film goes into a bunch of different things, but I think just going back to Andy Serkis and Smeagol, I think, I don't know, there's so much to love about this movie, especially the Helm's Deep battle scene, but I think the crux of the movie is those three and on their journey.
Yeah, there was a lot of push for him to be nominated for an Academy Award when this movie first came out. And I think eventually he will receive an honorary Lifetime Achievement Award, which, you know, is kind of bullshit because you wish that people could be forward-thinking in the moment and see how influential this was going to be. And there's still a debate about what's more important, the performance or the animators, you know?
Yeah.
And now it's become so blended between a lot of the performances being taken from the actual actors, the animation, so... But like you said, this is it just paved the way for mocap.
Definitely.
To become a way to perform in Hollywood,
yep.
A respectable part of performing. And like I mentioned, the narrative is split between basically three perspectives here. So I guess we'll go to Aragorn, Legolas, and Gimli, pick up on them. Aragorn looking like Geralt out there with his tracking abilities. Very impressive.
He's pretty nice with it. I think the funniest line in the movie comes from this beginning.
When he says he can't run cross-country?
Yeah.
I was dying. That's the other thing.
Dwarves are natural sprinters.
Yeah. Jonathan Rhys-Davies is Gimli. He's my favorite character because he is funny.
Yeah.
And I get a kick out of his comic relief. It isn't cheesy. I mean, at times it is, but it works.
That's the thing with these movies is they can do so many different things well. I mean, there's obviously that dramatic, tense atmosphere to it when you have this world with orcs and you have the Nazgul and you have all these different fantastical elements. But Peter Jackson, at times, is not afraid to get a little goofy with it. And I think with The Hobbit, sometimes he did take it a little too far. But in these films in particular, when you have these kind of, you know, it's a wacky world. There's a lot of crazy aspects to it. So Gimli and Legolas's back and forth, Gimli falling off a horse or things like that, where it doesn't take away from the overall film.
No, it never does. One of my favorite scenes, I think one of the funniest scenes of the movie, is when they're making breakfast and Sam and Gollum are bonding over fish and chips.
Mm-hmm.
Gollum says, no, I like that shit raw, dude. Nope, don't cook it. I want it wiggling.
I like in the extended edition, in the beginning, Sam drops something. They're climbing down a rope and Sam drops something and it's like, Frodo, catch it. And he's like, what is it? He's like, oh, it's seasoning in case we had to roast a chicken.
Hey, he does use it, right? Didn't he throw a little seasoning in the rats too?
The rabbits do? He's a little Thanos.
Yeah, he did do it. Yeah, he did do a little Thanos. He appreciates the...
Well, just that optimism of Sam thinking that there's a possibility of having a roast chicken on this fucking death-defying journey.
Well, that's a lot of people's favorite character, right? Samwise Gamgee. Everyone always says is that he's the true hero of the series.
I mean, I think a lot of people don't respect Frodo and... Not respect him, but...
That was me.
Yeah. I'm talking to you right now.
Yeah, right.
But everyone praises Sam, and rightfully so. I think he is the best character. But Frodo's personal struggle and his journey, it's so much intertwined with Sam, and he needed that kind of person to look after him and give him the support he needed, or he would have destroyed himself.
Right, and that conversation, like you said, it is a very simple theme to grasp. You need friends. Everyone needs a friend to help. But it's more than that, because Sam is able to put his head down. He's able to put the journey before his own life. And not everyone can do that. Not everyone would be able to withstand the journey that these characters are on. And it is a nice message of anybody can do can achieve greatness.
Yeah.
And they handle it so well. Obviously, it goes into the third movie, but...
Going back to, like, the tracking, when they're trying to find... Pip and Merry, and just some, I think some of the best shots in this movie were just people traveling in the landscape.
Yeah.
And just different angles, different shots, different kind of backgrounds, and...
I don't think there's ever been a more convincing fantasy world.
Yeah.
It just feels like Middle Earth, no matter what. You're never taken out of the world at all, and it's because of the shooting with those landscapes, because they make the effort to actually use practical effects instead of CG. But yeah, no, those tracking scenes are great. And Pip and Merry stumbling upon Treebeard, one of my favorite characters. And again, my second favorite character, played by Jonathan Rhys-Davies.
Yeah.
The voice of Gimli. I mean, the voice of Treebeard.
Another funny part, too, is when he calls him a tree and he's offended. But then he's like, yeah, but my name's Treebeard.
It's like some people call me Treebeard. It is different, you know?
But yeah, the Ents... The Ents are interesting characters to me because they are. It is a, even for this kind of world, it is a weird kind of.
It's high fantasy, certainly.
Yes, but I think here
it works.
Yeah,
because they're just giant talking trees. Who thought of this? Obviously, J.R.R. Tolkien. But it's so weird.
No, they're funny, and that whole dynamic with Treebeard and Pip and Merry is great. And you know, they go through like a pretty long journey. And I guess that's kind of, it doesn't really pick up until the end. I think after they find Gandalf until the end, that kind of third act, and the in-between's a little slower than the other, I guess, plot lines, but
I like that doesn't pick up until the end, because the whole movie is them trying to convince them to fight.
Yeah,
and you just want them to convince, because you want to see these big ass trees destroy orcs, and eventually you do. And it's a very obvious metaphor for taking care of the planet, you know, giving a name and a face to a tree, and then he doesn't want to fight. Mother Nature doesn't take sides. Until you burn her forest.
Yes.
And then, wait, Mother Nature can take a side here. So that's pretty cool. But the dialogue between them, kind of, you know, the breakdown in communication. I just wanted him to crack his neck. He seemed very stiff. Very tense. Just wanted, like a nice shoulder shrug.
Little neck crack.
No, but I like the Ents. And like you said, this is, it feels very high fantasy. So maybe it could have been too ridiculous for even Lord of the Rings, but... Like I said, I like those big-ass talking trees.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I'll do a Star Wars reference here. The Ents are kind of like what the Ewoks should have been.
Right,
kind of like this unforeseen ally against the greater evil that are more in tune with, I guess, nature, obviously, the Ents are, but, you know, something that you wouldn't really expect to help on this journey or join forces with. And yeah. They're just such an opposing, like, they're goofy and everything, how they're spent all those hours just saying good morning when it's already night by the time they finally get it out. And but at the end, when they're attacking Isengard, they are fucking people up.
Yeah, they are.
So it's...
It is ridiculous that those teddy bears took down the Empire. If they were giant trees, then I would have been more on board.
Exactly. But yeah, when we see like some of these characters come together here and out, obviously they introduced to the White Wizard, who I guess they thought was Saruman, but it ended up being Gandalf.
He was definitely doing a little Christopher Lee impression there.
Oh, yeah, when Aragorn and go with them. I think I read somewhere that they kind of superimposed some of Christopher Lee's facial features.
Okay.
And did a voiceover, so it would confuse the audience for that.
I was wondering if they did add his voice in there for a bit.
Oh, yeah, it's 100% did.
You are tracking the footsteps of two young hobbits.
Where are they?
They passed this way the day before yesterday. They met someone they did not expect.
It's such a great comeback. And that's where you get the whole story from Gandalf. And it's so funny to listening to George R. R. Martin reading the first book and being so happy that Gandalf died and then disappointed that he came back to life in the second one.
Yeah.
It's typical George.
But yeah,
it is a great reentrance. And it's one of the instances where him coming back, I don't think it takes away from his death at all. Because it's one of those weird fantasy things. It's like Daenerys walking out of the funeral, the flames with the dragons. Mm-hmm. It's just chance. You know, it just had to happen. It's the magic of the world willing this back into existence.
Well, he kind of explains it a little, but I think they go into more detail in, I think, the novels. But where he's going through the play-by-play of him, his fight, and then... His physical body dies and he kind of transcends to, I don't know.
Space. They mentioned space.
Yeah, they showed space.
Space is canon.
But it's like where he lived, you know, more lifetimes than you can imagine in the however so he was gone for. So when he comes back, it's kind of, you know, he says Gandalf. That's a name I haven't heard in a while. Even though he still remembered his play-by-play. But you remember the important things in life, right? Who cares what your name was when you can beat a fucking... fire demon.
Yeah, he remembers everything else but his name. Like, oh, Gandalf.
All his greatest achievements.
Yeah, yeah. He remembers all his stats. He's counting his points while he's playing. Fucking Gandalf. So arrogant.
But yeah, it's a great reintroduction to this character, and it's...
Ian McKellen, still so good as his character. Obviously the lone actor nominated for Fellowship. And maybe he should have been nominated for this one, because... he's better in Fellowship, because he has more to do, but mm-hmm. He's still so good in this.
Yeah.
And when he pulls out that cloak... And it's white.
Oh, yeah, it's fucking... it's spectacular.
I like how he does keep the gray, though. You know, keep it on the low.
Well, no, he had to, like, you know, sneak your way in.
Yeah, yeah.
Big reveal for everyone.
Inconspicuous, right, yeah. One of the scariest scenes for me as a kid was when they introduce King Theoden. First, he looks terrible, obviously. You don't know why. Why is this dead man sitting down on the throne with his eyes open? And then you look to the left... And there's another creepy-ass dude whispering in his ear. I don't like anything that's going on here. I don't like this. This is dark magic. This is Satan at work.
I wonder if his name, like his birth name, is Wormtongue, or he was just like that creepy that they had to give him a weird-ass nickname.
Right. It's like the soccer player Hulk. Was he born Hulk? No, it was obviously a nickname, yeah. Unless they just knew. You think his parents looked at him and said, he looks like a Wormtongue? No, it's definitely a nickname. It is a surname. Yeah, no, he is super creepy. I mean, all of this with what's happening with King Theoden. And as somebody who's not too familiar with the lore, I kind of just jump into this thinking, all right, Rohan is an important kingdom, mm-hmm. and Sauron needs to take it if he wants to win. So, cool. New king. Don't really know much about him, but you don't really need to. I think that's what this movie does so well. You could be confused as shit. So why are they doing this? But it just works.
They do that again when the elves come and kind of, I don't know the name of the elf, like the head. It's like,
right,
yeah. We never met this character, but it's kind of like...
Yes, right.
You get the idea right
away.
Oh,
yeah, his death is sad. You know him for 10 minutes, and you're sad about this elf that you just met.
But Théoden, he has a big role in this movie and in the next movie, too. So it's like... It's not really much in the introduction, but there's enough around it and kind of what they tell us about this character, Rohan, going forward that it's like, okay, we're caught up here.
He's very kingly when he does get back to his normal self. I just want to fight for him, you know? I want to follow him into battle or Helm's Deep to hide.
Yeah.
And then battle.
I'm not too much in, I don't know too much about the lore either, but every time I watch this movie, and you mentioned it to me before, Edoras, the capital,
It's not too great.
Yeah, it's kind of a shithole.
Bit run
Helms,
down.
Helms Deep, that's a stronghold. Right there.
They're like, we need to go to shitty ass Helms Deep to hide, and it's a giant castle spa. So
you were just at a hill.
Yeah. All inclusive. Yeah, they were literally just in the middle of some fucking dirt town. Like, that's the castle. And Gandalf even shits on him. He's like, is this a reception? Where's the party?
Yeah, and I think we got introduced to Eowyn. We got introduced to Eomor before when he meets up with Aragorn, but a couple of new characters that kind of are mainstays throughout the rest of the trilogy.
Yeah, Carl Urban. I mean, we don't get much of him, but he's great in the scenes that he's actually in.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of forget that he's in this. It's, oh, Carl Urban's here, yeah, too, and he sounds good. You know, he fits the role. But I love the moment, you know, the magic in Lord of the Rings. It is high fantasy, but it isn't the Harry Potter, wave your wand, you're a toad. It's very specific moments, and you have to make sure that you know what you're doing. And the moment where Gandalf basically performs the exorcism to get Saruman out of Theoden is a great scene. And it's creepy, too. You know, it's the horror elements throughout these three movies are great. And this one, like I said, it is darker, and that's one of those kind of horror scenes that really gets you on the edge of your seat.
Well, I love that line he delivers when a couple of scenes before this, when we've seen Theoden, when he's talking with his niece and nephew, and he's just kind of so displaced. He's not there. Mm-hmm. There's nothing inside of him. He's not really responding to his son being brought back, basically dying. And it's just, Wormtongue is speaking for him.
Right.
And he can't do anything. And then Gandalf comes, and he's like, comes up, you know, gets a little jump in a step, a little cockiness. He's like, you, and he goes, you have no power here, with such great delivery.
You have no power here, Gandalf the Grey.
That line laugh,
is
like,
just incredible.
Yeah.
So many memes in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot about all the memes that came out of this.
They're taking the Hobbits to Isengard. That was one.
Yes.
You have no power here. It's a memeable franchise.
Right, yeah, and just the iconic moments, you know, Smeagol delivering My Precious. But yeah, You Have No Power Here is meme. It's been memed so many times. And that's important to them to kind of get Wormtongue out of there, even though Aragorn spares his life. I'll never understand that.
You know, he's...
There's already been so much bloodshed. Why not? A little more.
This dude's been inside... Well, not... Saruman's been inside me for months, and this dude has just been fucking my whole life off, pretty much.
Yeah, let him at least chop his head off. Come on.
Yeah, maybe like an arm? I don't know.
Yeah, punch him.
Yeah.
Punch him right in the throat.
Rough him up a little.
See if he'll whisper to any king after that.
But that is kind of like another theme, or kind of something they're trying to convey in this film, is just the horrors of war and all the death and destruction that has happened. That's another debate they have later when Gandalf wants them to fight and stay, when Theoden wants to go to Helm's Deep.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, all this death and destruction. We saw it with a small town being raided. It's like, you know, you're going to have to fight eventually, but you got to still do what you can to try to protect the people, your own people.
Yeah, and the theme that's prevalent here is kind of a breakdown in communication throughout the world, throughout the known world. You would think that all these nations do stand for good, but one of the characters mentions, I think it's Theoden, that all the old alliances are dead.
Mm-hmm.
So when you stand idly by, you may not be doing anything wrong, but this darkness has been building in the shadows, and that's what they've allowed to happen. It's the theme is there with Game of Thrones as well. All the political battling and the White Walkers are coming.
Well, we see it with Cate Blanchett Galadriel when she says that we need to honor the old alliances with elves. And
she basically slaps him around. Says, listen, Red Skull, get your fucking boys over there. We're about to be run down.
And it's even, too, with the whole, I guess, dynamic between Gondor and Rohan, where it's the iconic light the torch scene at the end, where they finally, well, it takes Gandalf and do some maneuvering to make that allegiance, because you see how they're being run over there, but how they're not honoring any old alliances or anything, even in the wake of total destruction.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of, you got to sometimes give that little push.
And yeah, like you mentioned, he decides to pull back to Helm's Deep, but they do get attacked. And what are those guys called? The dudes who ride the devil dogs? They have a special name?
What, the Orcai? Or the
Yeah, I think
orcs?
So. The dudes on the dogs. They roll up. I think they kill Aragorn.
Yeah, riding orcs.
They're just orc riding orcs. Okay. That's a great little battle. Before the big battle, it's a great action scene. That's where the comedy to me was funny, when Gimli keeps being piled on.
Yeah.
I was laughing every time and a new disgusting creature just fell on top of him.
No, that was a great
battle.
He's
getting bailed out a lot.
Yeah, that was a great little battle sequence. And even, like, talking
about... Legolas standing there, you know, just picking everybody off.
I mean, that's...
The bow and arrow never gets old.
Yeah, and it's kind of like, I think that's something so important to these movies, is these little relationships. Obviously, Frodo and Sam is the big one. But Legolas and Gimli and Eowyn, they're kind of dynamic together. Even Aragorn, a little bit later on in the film, it's like they're a little back and forth. Their moments together add something, you know, a little lighter, but also like peaceful, hopeful. It's kind of
like...
Well,
the characters are changing. Yeah. The characters are definitely changing across the board. You know, Sam and Frodo were innocent hobbits. Now they're struggling with this pull between good and evil. And Aragorn was pretty much a loner. Legolas, I guess, as well, Gimli. But now they're three best friends traveling the world with a purpose, united, fighting for one thing. Merry and Pip are kind of still the same. They're just hanging out with the tree.
Yeah.
But they're there. They're doing stuff.
Get some pipe weed. That's all they...
Right.
That's all they really want in life.
What are your opinions on Aragorn as a character? Do you like him as kind of the archetype hero in this story?
I think it's a story with so many different characters where it's... If it was a limited cast and there wasn't that much focus on other characters exploring different things...
He's a little boring.
Then you could be like, okay, then... There's not really depth, but because you have all these vast array of colorful and different characters, it's like you kind of need that, I guess, steady leader type.
Yeah, definitely.
Character. Someone in that role, yeah.
He's a straight man for all these different colorful characters. He's the one that you identify with. I'm an Aragorn. You know, I'm a man. I could lead this charge. But I also like
how people identify with, like, the biggest, like, you know, best character. It's like I can see myself as a Gimli. Like, I could do that.
Yeah, for Guardians of the Galaxy, you think you're Star-Lord.
Yeah. So you don't always have to see yourself in, like, the...
Star-Lord's awesome.
The best hero type character. It's all right to see.
You're like, in Harry Potter, I'm just Snape, you know? Really strong, but the point I wanted to make about Aragorn is that he is kind of the loner, always dressed in black, but he's not a dick. He goes out of his way to spread the message of hope, that he does have a lot of optimism in him. Obviously, he's got the past and the history, the political history of... you know, the throne that he is supposed to have. But he's just a cool dude. He is a genuinely good dude. And like you said, maybe if there weren't... And that's another great thing that this movie does. There are so many damn characters and no one feels cheated. Because you can time how much time they do have on screen. And it may surprise you, the limited time that some of these characters have, you don't even realize it. Because they're there to perform a role, and that's a credit to the narrative and the script. But, you know, I like Aragorn going back, constantly seeing the flashes of Liv Tyler, you know... trying to remember what's her character name. Who are you again? I know you're Liv Tyler.
Oh,
and you're an elf.
You're asking me.
Who is this? No, Aaron? Aragorn's asking her in his flashbacks. He can't remember.
Well, speaking of flashbacks, I think one of my favorite parts of the extended edition is the flashback scene between Boromir and Faramir. I think that's such a great addition. I'm upset that they took it out. I mean, I love Sean Bean, so obviously I would want more of him in this movie, but I think it adds so much to... not only Faramir's character, this new character that we're introduced to, but kind of a retrospective on Boromir, where they do talk about it with Faramir about how the ring corrupted him. But you just see the type of person he was before that, where he did care for his brother, defended him against his father. And, you know, he was kind of just put in this position by his father to get the ring for Gondor and kind of... You could just tell that he was a good person, and it was the ring and the influence of his father that kind of led him to have that moment with Frodo. And he does have that kind of moment of reflection in that movie where at the end of a fellowship. But I think that's just a great moment for those characters.
Yeah, and it adds more depth to that character. It makes his death even that much more sad because you understand. You see those moments in the fellowship when he's hanging out with the hobbits. He's playing around and he's defending them against Aragorn. So he was a good dude, and he's definitely one of the best characters, and it's always great to get more Sean Bean in your movie. But the Faramir character, it is interesting, because, once again, it's a character that's introduced, and you don't really know that about his father. I mean, obviously you can see that he's not letting them go, so he might have plans to use the ring. But it's interesting, because you don't know, because he doesn't know. You don't know, can you trust him? What is he going to do? Is he going to let the hobbits go? Is he going to steal the ring? Is he going to give them over? Obviously, he's not going to do that because he's loyal to his kingdom. But that's, once again, they should be fighting. Everyone should be united, and they're still, I don't know, maybe I should use the ring.
Well, I read something where this character in the books, it's a different change. I don't think there's that much, I don't think he takes him prisoner.
Not as much confliction?
Yeah, and I think they added that in.
Well, I like that. I like that ad. Because once again, I haven't watched this movie in years. So when he pops up, I'm like, is he good or bad again?
Yeah. Well, they kind of add, and it's kind of a reflection on his father, where he is able to kind of, his judgment is able to be clouded in regards to Frodo, Sam, because of the amount of pressure his father put on him and him wanting to please him.
Do you think Orlando Bloom's a good actor?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, you think he's good in this?
I love his portrayal of Legolas.
I don't love it.
No?
I think I would still say it's a 10 out of 10, because I'm not going to take it away because Legolas isn't an incredible actor. I mean, he's there to look great, you know, with the bow and arrow, and he's there to look pretty.
Yeah.
I also don't like how pretty Legolas and Viggo Mortensen are. You can't be that. You can't have two pretty guys.
Yeah.
They try to gruff him up a bit, but no. Viggo Mortensen back then was a pretty dude. But I think a better actor, like a prime Tom Hiddleston as Legolas.
Okay.
That to me works. Yeah. You're like, yeah.
Nah.
Yeah, might as well, right?
I think he's good. I like the way they play off each other, Gimli and Legolas characters. And I think he never necessarily has a...
And this is when he's Orlando Bloom.
Yeah.
Now, he's the biggest star in these movies at this point in his life. He's like the dude.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this, Pirates of the Caribbean. What a run. Like, a nice 6-year run there.
Yeah. And it's pretty...
Nice McGrady run.
It was a pretty nice run.
But I think, once again, it doesn't take away from the movie, but I think maybe it would have made it a little better if there was a better actor playing Legolas.
Well, and I also think,
but the dynamic is so great.
When we talk about, like, performances in these films, I think there's a ton of great ones, but there's so much going on, so many different characters, that I think sometimes it's not a film where, if it was a smaller cast, where you can really focus in on one person's performance. I think you can only really do that with Ian McKellen in the first movie, Gollum in this one, and a few other instances of better performances, but it's not the sole focus. So I think sometimes a lot of the better performances can get lost, because there is so much going on. So it's like, you know, all of them are good, but there's not really too much where you can select and pick and choose from.
Right. It's just his line when he grabs the orc and says, "You lie." I was just like, ooh, say that again. Cut.
But he makes up for it by skating downstairs and picking off orcs with bow and arrows.
That is awesome, dude. Yeah. When he's skating down those stairs. Legolas, that's already 2. I'm on 17. Love it.
Going back to some of the other changes, I guess, from the books. Like I said, I'm not too knowledgeable on them, but I just want to give credit to some of the screenwriters and producers that I feel like we always talk about Tolkien and Peter Jackson, and deservedly so, but Fran Walsh and Philippa Boyens had such an impact on the screen and producing this, and I think the writing gets a little lost in these movies because it is such a spectacle, and there is a lot going on, but at the crux, I don't think this movie wouldn't be regarded as, well, all the movies won't be regarded as masterpieces if the script wasn't as solid as it is.
The script is very solid, and like you said, it's funny at times, it's serious at times, but it never takes you out of it. There's never a line of dialogue where you think, whoa, this is a cheesy fantasy line. Everything feels very real and natural, the conversations between them, and that does get lost. When you don't notice it, it's mm-hmm. good.
But it's like you have those three at kind of like the top overseeing everything, and then Andrew Lesney's cinematography and Howard Shore's score. It's just I don't think any other film franchise or movie blended all those different aspects so well into such a epic experience.
This is it's 5th century Athens. That's all the minds coming together to bring together this
and
trilogy.
Obviously all the visual effects, and you know, I kind of only mentioned like the most popular aspects of the filmmaking, but there's so much that I know went into making these movies, and I just think it's just a technical masterpiece.
Right. Well, Helm's Deep represents that perfectly. A lot of people consider it to be the most cinematic battle of all time and the best. And Nerdwriter has a fantastic video on how this battle was brought to life and the use of color, the tints that he puts over this battle, the blue tint. And that color scheme shows up a couple times throughout the movie. So it's building towards it. It's foreshadowing this confrontation. And it is epic. And Christopher Lee as Saruman, he's not in this movie as much, but I do love when he shows Wormtongue the army, when he says, we don't have enough men. He's like, I got a couple.
He drops a tear.
Seriously, yeah.
Yeah.
He was so moved.
Yeah, well, the kind of... And we'll
I
it.
Love the orcs, even though, you know, they're big and they're ugly and they're evil.
Yeah.
But they're scary as fuck, dude. I like to think that within their own... homes, they're all just they're decent people, you know? They're just orcs being orcs. Well, you have to go out and fight. You want to be scary.
Well, it's like when Faramir finds that that human soldier, and he's like, I wonder what this, like, if he even wanted to be here, if he was had an evil heart, or would he just rather be home? And he kind of has that moment of reflection on the human characters. Why not do that for the orcs, you know? Maybe he has a wife and kid at home.
little Johnny.
Just like us.
Right. Taking him to soccer practice.
But yeah, they are fucking terrifying, man.
They are. And they look so good. Mm-hmm. The makeup is incredible. They're so slimy when they're born. I don't like that. When they're ripping off all the slime and the skin. And they're just like slapping them in the face, like, yeah, it looks good. Put them in line. It's disgusting. And that's the crew. That's who they're rolling with, man. And they're.
Well, I like the one orc guy hops up on the rock.
You always need that one guy who hypes up everybody. It would have been great if he got arrow to the throat. But that's what I wanted with the Long Night. I wanted the enemies to be just. It almost feels like you can't win. It's like the threat is just insurmountable. And the orcs, the way that they're climbing on those ladders, the way that they attack Helm's Deep. I mean, even Theoden says that, oh, is this all you could conjure?
Well, there's a nice balance of, like, you know, early on they have a strong, like, defense to this attack, and it just slowly but surely becomes more and more inevitable that, you know, we're going to lose this. And they have fucking bombs, you know?
Dude, I think that's so funny, the way he dives in there.
Yeah, it's
like,
great.
Got him! He'd eaten all those arrows, and then he just sprints in at the very bit after it was slow motion. And Aragorn, kill him! I love that. That might be my favorite action moment of Helm's Deep. But yeah, I like the way that they play with that.
There's like some inspiration in there, and they have the score too at times that I love the score so much. It's just, you know, it's kind of like with
the marching, when the orcs are marching and that theme starts playing.
But they do like sprinkle in some like optimism and at times. But then things quickly change, and it just, they play with different emotions and kind of different tensions and kind of what's going to happen going forward. But you know, you have the elves come in the beginning, and they're kind of hopeful, and they have this new, I guess, beacon of hope. Because before that, when Aragorn's talking to the kid who probably never seen a battle before in his life, and you know, he tries to give him some optimism. Hey, this is a great sword, even though it looks like fucking shit.
Okay.
Whipping that thing around. I love those sounds of the swords going through the air.
It breaks after he's whipping it.
Yeah. And two, when Legolas and Aragorn are having that conversation in that room with all the soldiers, mm-hmm. and he just breaks out and says, then we'll die with them, or I'll die with them. You know,
goes Captain America there.
Yeah.
We'll fail together.
He fucked him over. Legolas thought he was slick speaking Elvish. It's like, yeah, they can't understand me.
Yeah, that was funny. So how do the sequences of that battle go? They start out, the defense is really solid, then they blow up the wall, and then the fighting comes. That's when we get Legolas sliding down on the stairs.
Yeah.
And the battle opens up, so you just don't want people defending a wall the whole time. Of course, you want to give them some open space.
Yeah, there was a lot going on, too, and I think they did a good job of not only within the battle, but in other areas of the film. So you had them infiltrating the wall, then you had them trying to break down the gate and stuff like that, but then you had everything going on in Isengard with the Ents. And
very clever by Pip and Merry there. Take us the other way.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Fucking bopped him.
Right, yeah, giving him the drive by of the war.
Yeah.
It's like in Family Guy when they're in the Star Wars, when the dad takes his children to see the war, mm-hmm. to see the rebellion. It's like, you kids need to see this. They hear lasers. Windows up. That was what they were doing with Treebeard.
Yeah. I love that.
I love the conference too, the council.
Yeah.
It's like, we have decided you are not orcs. Like, okay, good. What about the fighting?
Mary was getting tight.
He was. He was pissed.
I like that sequence too. I feel like that kind of, you know, Helm's Deep is just, like you said, such a fantastic battle, but I love this sequence too. It's just, you know, Saruman seeing everything he built just being destroyed, and kind of just these Ents just fucking people up, taking down the dam, flooding everything. I thought that made for one of the Ents who was on fire dive in.
yeah, hilarious. He was like, got all the flames.
And that's another moment where it's just like a hilarious moment in the midst of this epic battle, and it just doesn't take away anything.
Oh yeah, and I love when Merry and Pip are throwing rocks at the orcs, and Treebeard's like, what a shot, boys. Just hyping them up.
But they did a good job of kind of flipping through Helm's Deep, Isengard, and Frodo's storyline.
Yes, and they go away from him for a little bit here. But yeah, we see that attack. Now, where are they exactly? I guess they're close. They're bordering Mordor, right, in Gondor. So they're pretty close to the enemy anyway.
They're in a Gondor city.
Right.
Something like that.
Right. Yeah, it sounds about right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sounds good.
Well,
whenever the undead kings come around on those flying dragon thingies with no eyes.
I'm pretty sure it's the same place in the next movie where they're defending that city, and that's where Faramir goes. That's right. Where his dad sends him to defend.
Yeah, and Isengard, it's just one of those moments where the giant talking trees are going to fight, and you love it.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it is pure good versus evil, and you know you're getting Helm's Deep, but it's just icing on top of the cake. But going back to Helm's Deep, when they're forced to retreat, well, going to the bridge too, when I fucking love that when he's like, throw me. It's like, are you sure?
It's so ridiculous though when they both ran. It's like it's like they're Hulk smashing and it's just creating a wave and just
it's the Black Panther.
Yeah,
it's the, I don't know what it is,
it's
but
like
it works.
He's just landing and they just all fly
plot armor
around him.
Plot armor. Just yeah. Like, whoa, main characters, fuck.
Run.
Get out of here. That's great, though, them fighting back to back. That's when the music really starts. The mm-hmm. score hammers home that they are the heroes here.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they get back is so funny, too, on the rope. They're just being pulled while all these other orcs are coming with giant ladders, and they're just off to the side being pulled by Legolas.
I love how they have the even bigger ladders, too.
Yeah. They were like, oh, you thought those ladders were dope? Yeah, we got hooks. Giant hooks and giant ladders. And the king, I love when the king scraps. He's watching all the battle, but when it comes to his door, he's like, no, fuck you. I'm front line.
Until I get hurt. He was like shook. He didn't know like the retreat plan for the women and children. He didn't really know what's going on. And Aragorn's like, hey, let's just ride out there.
Hey, next movie, you're going to see.
He's like, yeah,
you
let's just go
bow
right
down
out.
To me.
We'll die in glory.
I know.
And again, they go through with the horses, and they just cut through like.
Butter. Yeah. No, the plot armor there. Those horses were built with fucking, I don't know.
Yeah,
they were bulls instead of horses. What is he king of? What
Théoden?
Does he become king of? No, Aragorn in the third movie.
Gondor.
Okay, Gondor.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the throne he gave up.
Well, it's the whole thing.
It's complicated.
Yeah,
I need to read the books.
But. I think.
Well, that's a suicide mission, right? When they go out on the horses?
Well, he knows even before that. You kind of hear that voiceover of Gandalf saying, on the fifth day at dawn or whatever, sunrise.
Right.
But I think, I don't know, what's it called? I don't know if it's like a hero moment or just, I think that's one of the best moments of, I guess.
Oh, it's certainly a hero moment for Gandalf. Yeah. It's so inspiring when you see him up there in all white. And he's got his boys with him.
Carl Urban comes in.
Fucking
I love
Carl
that
Urban.
Fucking shot.
Yeah.
And he just rides in behind him.
It's a great shot. It's like, yeah, you didn't know we knew each other? Yeah.
It's like they telegraphed it, but that moment itself
matter.
Is just so... It's one of my favorite moments in, I guess, film.
It is a rare middle chapter in which the good guys kind of win. I mean, they don't win, obviously, the overall war, but they win this one battle. And they show Saruman that they are a force to be reckoned with here. That it's not going to be as simple as just taking over the world.
Well, it even ends
that
on
men
like
have
a,
something left to fight for.
It ends on like a kind of bittersweet, maybe not bittersweet moment, but like when Gandalf says, "We won the battle for Helm's Deep, but the battle for Middle Earth has just begun."
Right.
It's like kind of like, oh, okay.
Right, and they won that battle, but Frodo is losing.
Well,
Frodo
they won that. They won in Isengard, but Frodo is
he's
personal.
Going insane.
Yeah, his personal battle is.
He is succumbing to the pull of the ring.
Yeah.
And that's a great shot, too, when he's confronting the Kingsguard, the flying Kingsguard guy. those guys creep me the fuck out, too.
Yeah, the Nazgul? Yeah, they're scary. They're not in it for a lot. They're only in, especially in this movie, they had that one flyover scene in the swamp area, but seeing them in battle is terrifying. I don't know what I would do.
And with Frodo, it's not only the pull of the ring. He kind of becomes disillusioned. And I guess that obviously is attributed to the ring as well. But it almost feels like he doesn't know what side he's on. Because he's seeing so many different people with their different agendas. And you would think that Faramir is somebody who's going to help you on your journey. And he doesn't at first. So you could see how all of this is really starting to weigh on Frodo. But Sam... He really is his rock. He is his Sam, as he says. I'm your Sam. You don't recognize me?
Well, that's the Frodo character to a T, just the innocence of being able to grow up in a place like the Shire where, you know, there's really not any of the hardships that the rest of the world experiences and kind of just being thrust into, not only, like, obviously the journey itself and the ring takes a huge toll, but I guess I would think he would have a... kind of similar reaction if he just went out and experienced the world, you know, just seeing all the different aspects and horrors of the world. So it's kind of all this just coming down on this poor guy.
Right, and exactly. In a matter of how much time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you mentioned it. It's something that maybe Bilbo would have dealt better with, because he was the more of the adventurer. But Frodo, not so much. He was comfortable with his life in the Shire. Who wouldn't be?
Mm-hmm.
It was a beautiful place, just chilling, reading books. Uncle Gandalf came by a couple times with fireworks.
Yeah.
Now, life has changed, certainly.
And I love this monologue Sam speaks at the end of this movie. It's...
I know. It's so wrong. By rights, we shouldn't even be here.
Once again, the theme is very simple.
Yeah.
But getting there is tough.
Mm-hmm.
Getting to that monologue, it's not like they just woke up, had a bad day, and they're like, you know what? It is worth fighting for good, though, Mr. Frodo. No, they just saw some fucked up shit. They've been through some shit. So you need that pep talk, and it works.
Yeah, and also to Gollum at the end, and, he's just so great. Just such a great character.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Such a great performance.
He's bringing them to the spider, right?
Yeah, him just going back and forth and kind of...
Hated that in the video game.
Getting both sides on the same page. And well, I love Gollum just bullies Schmeagol.
I love the scene when he dismisses him.
Leave now and never come back. No.
That was a great scene.
Yeah.
I remember watching that as a kid, and I was just so confused.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, are there two of them? Is one coming in and then hiding? What is going on here?
Yeah.
But the way they deal with that, the split personality, it's actually very sympathetic. Because you really do feel for him when he's trying to get this personality. He's telling him to go away.
And it makes sense.
And he can't lose it.
Because he's like, all the shit he's been through, and obviously his physical and mental state, it's like he can't realize what Frodo did to save him. So when Sam says, you know, Frodo, you did that to save you, it's obviously he's not in the right state to be like, oh, yeah, okay, and actually like think it out.
Because he was starting to come around.
Yeah, and that kind of brought Gollum back, like we saw with Faramir, and it would just, at this point, it just overtakes him.
Yeah.
And I read somewhere that Andy Serkis, he used... like heroin addicts and people with addiction for inspiration for this performance. Because it is an addiction where he can't live, or he feels that he needs this ring, and like it overcomes with him, it overclouds his judgment, and he'll do whatever it takes to acquire this.
That is a great point. Yeah, the way to see that as a metaphor for addiction. There you go. There are the themes that you can unpack in Lord of the Rings. It isn't just as simple as good versus evil, orcs versus men.
Mm-hmm.
And his performance really epitomizes that. But this movie overall... The performance, the battle, the cinematography, the score, the narrative, the acting, the creativity in creating this world that goes back to the books of J.R.R. Tolkien, him just kind of setting the framework for what would one day become the best trilogy of all time. And the middle chapter, like I said, I think the first one, I don't remember how I scored it, but this is a definitive masterpiece. I mean, this is a 10 out of 10. You can't. I don't know what else to say.
I think they all are, and for different reasons. I think the first one, its introduction to this world and what it was able to establish and kind of, I guess, create to a whole new audience and test the limits of film, and kind of very similar to the original Star Wars trilogy, where it's like, I didn't know this could be done.
And right. I mean, we said it on the first one, but mm-hmm. the way that this movie still looks so good. It looks incredible. It doesn't look dated at all.
Yeah.
And it's, man, using those practical sets, it really pays off for the when people watch your movies in 10, 20, 30 years.
And I think this one might be the best movie as a movie, and like the third one is just a perfect ending and wrap up to the story. So I think they all are kind of masterpieces in their own way.
Even as a middle chapter, they talked about how it was difficult for them to find a starting point and an ending point, and I think they did it perfectly, where obviously you know the story is going to continue, but you could just check out and be like, they wanted Helm's Deep. Yeah. It's over.
I love how the first two movies end.
Yeah.
They kind of wrap up this kind of sub-journey, I guess, and they kind of just cut it in the middle. It's like, oh, they leave you on some optimism and kind of reflecting on that event, and it's like, but you know, we got something else to handle, and it kind of wants to bring your audience back. And I think I could say this about any of the movies, but it's just such a unique, I guess, experience when like a piece of art can inspire someone to like actively try to seek out more information about your piece. It's like, and it's that's not like a a negative to it where I have to find other information to kind of make sense of it, because it makes perfect sense within the film. But the way movies like this, Star Wars movies, Game of Thrones, Marvel movies, kind of inspire your audience to not just be a fan, but just kind of want to learn as much as you can about this world is truly something that is...
They turn fans into fanatics.
Yeah.
Where it becomes as much as I can digest into this universe. And obviously I have some books to read if I really want to learn more. And rewatching the movies has really made me want to dive into the lore and mythology of these films. But they are incredible.
Well, yeah, it's like I've watched the movie so many times. It's just like I know there's just so much out there that I've yet to learn, that I can learn about and know about and experience. So that excites me.
Yes, it does. And we will be back next week with our Return of the King revisited. We're going to get these done, get these to you, and I hope you enjoy them. And I hope you look out for our Last of Us review that will also be dropping this week in a couple of days. Some technical difficulties behind the scenes, but we want to make the videos as best as we can.
Teddy spilled the cereal on the keyboard.
Yeah, right. We're also afraid to upload it because of the response. But hey, that's the internet, right? Good old YouTube.
We got through season 8.
That is true. We're always just going to keep referencing that. That was our, we were like Frodo and Sam. And I don't think we made it. I don't think we made it to Mount Doom.
Yeah.
I think we turned back at the Black Gate. That's a big gate. We're not getting through.
What Marvel movie's coming out?
Yeah, exactly.
Just like just going back to the Shire.
Some nice Black Widow. Oh, guess the video's over. Ended pretty abruptly. Hey guys, Bo Oliver here for one final send-off. And before we go, we would like to thank our very special Patreon members, pledgers, whatever you guys want to call yourselves. You keep the lights on here at the studio. So it's really our pleasure to review all these movies, TV shows, video games that we all know and love. And we actually have a couple of shows that have been suggested by Patreon members that we will be reviewing in the next couple of weeks. And if you're a fan of anime, get excited because we have Neon Genesis, My Hero Academia, Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood, not technically an anime, but also Castlevania. And of course, if you want to visit our Patreon page and pledge, see the different rewards that we have, maybe you can suggest a show, a movie, a video game. Or maybe you don't want to do any of that. Honestly, watching up until this point of the video is good enough for me. So, thank you out there, and stay safe.